Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernon. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Hello there. I hope you're all well and I've had a good, I think it's 2 weeks since I spoke to you last. We're over all the sickness now in this house, so let's try and get a bit of momentum back into our episodes. For any of you that have been waiting for a response to your submissions, I have got back to most people, so check your spam. For some reason, my email goes into spam folders. Have a look there and let me know if you're available. And if I haven't responded to you, I will by the end of this week, so expect an email or response by Sunday. I'm going to crack on with this week's episode and introduce you to my guest, Kate, who shared her three pregnancies and two births. So Kate had two very different experiences with birth. She opted for private care with her first pregnancy. She admits that she went into this pregnancy, labour and birth with little or no preparation. She just trusted her healthcare professional. She talks about, after giving birth to her son, the paediatrician noticed that on his legs there was extra skin and that Kate's placenta potentially stopped working at the latter stages of her pregnancy, and this wasn't flagged by her consultant. So I'll let you hear what Kate has to say about that and how she approached that with the consultant herself. Unfortunately, she then suffered an early pregnancy loss in her second pregnancy, and she talks about experiencing that alone. It was during the height of COVID, so she went into the hospital alone. She travelled home alone while bleeding really heavily. She did obviously have the support of her husband then when she got home, and she, fortunately for her, didn't have to have any procedures, was okay to suffer the loss at home, basically. On her third pregnancy, she decided to opt for a home birth, so to give birth in the comfort of her own home. She was supported by a midwife and her husband and laboured for a couple of hours there, but the decision was made to transfer to a hospital. She was back to back again throughout this labour, as her little boy was in her first pregnancy as well, throughout labour. So she said she was in a significant amount of pain, a lot of pain. But this time round was supported so much more than she was the first time. She shares both of her breastfeeding experiences in detail, which I think is nice for those of you who have just started breastfeeding, who are also in the early days of breastfeeding. It's nice for you to hear this side of someone's experience as well. So thank you, Kate, for sharing your experience. I really appreciate it. And I will let you all enjoy her episode. So Kate, you are very welcome to Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. Looking forward to sitting down and have this chat with you, and thank you for your patience. I know I'm all over the place trying to book everyone in and get all these conversations scheduled. So thank you, first of all.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on. I'm a bit apprehensive and nervous, and I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth.
That's what I love.
Hopefully something that just can, I don't know, bring a bit of reflection or inspiration into someone else's journey.
Do you want to give us a little introduction to you and your family, and then we'll get stuck in?
Yeah, perfect. So I'm a mother of two now. I had my first son in May 2020, during the kind of start of the pandemic. And then my second son just there in May 2023. So I did have two very different experiences in two different hospitals in Dublin, because I changed myself location wise where I lived, and also because I was unhappy with the support or lack thereof that I got in one hospital. So I thought I would try another. Originally, I wasn't going to try any hospital. I had opted for a home birth, and I had all my scans privately on my second. And then once I met my home birth midwife, she was like, no, you actually have to, you know, be in communication with a hospital in case you have to transfer in. So I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I just thought I could totally leave that out and just about my happy way. But she was like, no, no, they need to have your file and your information and stuff like that. So that's where I then obviously decided to, and had to more so, choose another hospital, and that way.
So do you want to talk us through your first pregnancy? We'll talk through their early days, conception.
Yeah, so we got, or I conceived quite quickly, luckily enough, after we got married, which was amazing. We were planning, which was great. And it just came, you know, as a surprise more so, even though you are planning and you are trying, and you don't expect to conceive so quickly. So it was amazing that we did. I was guided by my family, who, I'm the youngest of five girls, so who had all been under a particular doctor in a hospital, to go under him. So I obviously had no experience of anything else, mm-hmm. and personal experience and family experience, and all of their feedback was all I had to go on. So I went into him, and everything was fine. He said, you were young, healthy, fit. You know, I was in my early 30s. There was no problems with my pregnancy. So that was great. We went on honeymoon in the October, and we went to Singapore and Bali. And on the way back, I ended up collapsing in Singapore. I think it was just exhaustion and fatigue and heat and a combination of a few things. And so we were a little bit worried. But when we came home, we got checked. And again, we just got the same. You're young, you're healthy, you're fit. It might have been a hydration issue or anything like that. So that was fine. We went throughout my pregnancy going in and out of appointments, which was nice. You had the consistency and continuity, which I liked anyway, of going to the same gynecologist. Everything seemed fine. Scans seemed fine. It was all fine. We came to coming up to my 40 week, my 40 weeks. And I remember my mum saying to me, oh, when are you back in to the hospital? And I said, oh, I'm not back in till next week. And she was a little bit taken back. And I said, oh, why? She just said, oh, you're just very small. And I had gotten that throughout my pregnancy. And even in my second pregnancy, I just found it so irritating and triggering when people said that, because I'm 5'9" and, or 5'11". 5'11". And that's just my height, and it is what it is. So I don't think I was small in my pregnancies. It's just that I was taller, and I also have a longer torso than legs. Mm-hmm. If you're, so I'm kind of longer upper body than I would be lower body. So it was always a passing comment that people made to me, that I was small, that I was very neat, and I didn't really think anything of it, to be honest. But my mum is quite small, and she had, well, what is considered today small babies. So again, I didn't think anything of it. I went in at 40 weeks on the Wednesday, and I thought I had a show that morning, and I said it to the doctor, and he's checked me and said, no, the cervix, you know, wasn't opening or didn't look like it was ready. I was fine. I said, okay, no problem. Upon leaving the office, I asked what the procedure, the protocol was in that hospital in relation to going over 40 weeks, how long I would be allowed. And he said, oh, just come in next week. And if you're, you know, still in the same situation that you're in. I'll just have you in and out as soon as possible. And I was like, oh, okay. And was leaving the room. And upon leaving the room, he opened the door for me. And I turned around and said, oh, I don't want a C-section. And he was so taken back. He was like, oh, okay. I said, no,
but
I
want. That's what he meant.
Yeah, that's what he meant.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
It didn't, the penny didn't drop at me until I was leaving. And now again, he would be more of a gynecologist who deals with high risk patients. Mm-hmm. That would be more of his, a lot of his clientele would also choose that option.
Okay.
They would choose a, you know, a C-section, even if they weren't high risk. That's kind of what he's known for. I don't want to sound, you know, too prejudicial in that sense. But the majority of people who would see that doctor would, even if they were young, fit, healthy women, just choose that option, whatever. So he was a bit taken back by that. And I said, no, I want to go into labour, you know, naturally. And he said, oh, okay, then, well, we'll just see you next week then for a checkup. And I said, oh, okay. I left his office. I had those kind of small achy period pains. That's why I thought that something was moving or happening. But after being with him, I didn't think anything more. So had a bath on the Wednesday. Had a little bit of leaking, which I thought was just from the bath water. You know, when you're getting out, and a little bit kind of afterwards, because obviously your pelvic floor isn't as tight as it normally would have or usually would have. And the Thursday, the achy feeling continued. And then again, had a bath. And then on the Thursday night, I couldn't sleep at all. I was up all night with this pain. So what I didn't know was that I was in pre-labor, but that you know, taking its time to come on. So a lot of, I suppose, lack for me in regards to, you know, your Googling, but research on my side. I think I had very much handed all of my knowledge or placed that in the gynecologist's hands. So mm-hmm. I didn't know what to expect. Like, I didn't know at that stage that, you know, one in four women's waters only break. The majority of women's waters don't break, you know, or your water doesn't break in one big splash like it does in American movies. It can dribble out, or it can come, you know, in kind of little bits and pieces. I didn't know any of that. So actually the leaking from the bath was my water breaking slowly, but I didn't know. So on the Friday night, I just said to my husband, just ring the hospital and see what they say. So he rang and I said, I think my water is broken. And the midwife was like, well, when did your water break? And I was like, I don't really know. So she said, come in immediately, because if it's more than 48 hours, you know, there could be a risk of infection, la, la, la. Well, I went straight in anyway to the hospital. It was about 10 at night, brought my case with me. Obviously, at this stage, my husband couldn't come in at all. So he just dropped me at the door. So she checked me. She said, oh, your waters have broken. They're well gone. Again, asked me when they broke. I said, I don't know, because no one told me that they could break in bits and pieces or anything like this. So I don't really know. So she said, okay, we'll just get you ready for a labor ward. So after that, I was left on a chair in the hospital for about 4 hours. So one of those really uncomfortable wooden chairs. They weren't to like give me a birthing ball because of what was happening for infection reasons or whatever else. So I just left to sit on the chair and my husband was outside. So eventually at about 2 o'clock in the morning, they called me in and my husband could come in. That was fine to the labor ward, which I did. So I continued to labor there. My pains continued to get a little bit more intensive. And I'd say about after an hour or 2 hours, the nurse in the room was just having a chat with me and then offered me oxytocin. So again, I didn't know what it was. very inexperienced, which I totally take responsibility for in that regard. You know, I should have read or researched and informed myself much more. I didn't know what it was. And my sister, one of my sisters had recently had a home birth and was very holistic, much more informed than I was. So I asked my husband to text her. So she explained to me what it was. I also have a heart murmur, so I was a little bit cautious about taking anything. So I just said to the nurse, I'm just going to hold off, you know, for a moment. I don't particularly want to take it, if that's okay. So she left the room and that was fine. My husband was texting my sister, continued, and she came back with two nurses. She came back with the head midwife of the ward and another nurse. And I felt extremely intimidated at that stage. And was told that if I didn't take this, that basically I could be labouring for days. You know, I would be left here for days. You know, I'd be in extreme pain. Everything that comes with that. So I was very afraid and fearful. So I took it. But then again, having the lack of information, I didn't understand that obviously it brings contractions on, which they told me, but I didn't understand that it brought contractions on so intensively, so severely, and like automatically, that I hadn't prepared even breath work wise, you know, what was going to happen the minute that was administered. So that was administered and I was kind of moving around the room. I was on all fours, you know, I was trying different positions as you do. My husband was helping me. And the moment that was administered, I could no longer stand. My legs were shaking and giving away underneath me. I had no control at all. I felt like I was going into almost spasms, that the contractions were coming so fast and so strong. What I didn't know at that point was that Jonathan, my son, was back to back.
Okay.
So was both of them were, ironically. So he was trying to turn, which was making my labor longer because he was being a little bit lazier. But then when the contractions came, obviously the push on him and the intensity to try and turn was just too much for me and for him as well. So his heart rate started to drop and I just was in convulsions. I was collapsing and I couldn't control the contractions or my breath when they were coming. So I opted for an epidural, which they administered, which was fine. And it got to a stage then where they had to pull him. A little bit of a suction needed to be used on him. And I had an episiotomy to bring him out. So that was fine. That all went well. Again, I felt in this particular hospital that there wasn't as much privacy. It was a very large room. There seemed like a lot of people in it. You know, people would come in and out of the room, not even kind of acknowledge me, you know, talk about me, look at my chart, would not acknowledge me, definitely not acknowledge my husband, and then walk out. So I felt very much almost like in a bit of a dream where I was there but I wasn't there. But then sometimes I thought maybe that was the drugs and the effects of the drugs as well. You know, sometimes you're feeling a little bit questioning of yourself and your self-worth, but then you think you're being paranoid about it as well. So you're like, okay, what does matter? So unfortunately, as I was wheeled on to the ward, my husband had to leave at that stage. I had Jonathan on a Friday, well, Saturday morning, at like 10:45 Saturday morning. So they say we'll never go into hospital on a weekend. And I went into hospital on a bank holiday weekend. So I wasn't seen again till the Tuesday by anyone. Now, all the private rooms in the hospital were closed because of the pandemic. So I was placed on a ward, which was fine. The irony of it was that instead of six women in my room, there were eight, and we were shoved, is a polite word, into the room together. Like
so tight,
inches. Like I could touch not only Jonathan but also the other ladies, baby, you know. But I suppose you just make do, because we didn't, and no one knew at that stage what was going on, or you know, nurses and hospitals and us. So we just got on with it. But I suppose as a first time mom, it was a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
Have the baby. There wasn't much time for chest to chest. And then you're kind of wheeled out onto a ward and it's like, there you go. And you're like, oh, okay. And I'd had an epidural and the severity of it meant that obviously I couldn't feel anything below my legs. So you're left in the bed on your own. And then the bed's so low down and the baby's so high up. You're like, so how am I even going to get the baby if they cry? Because I can't move the lower half of my body at all. So just a little bit of it just comes so quickly. It happens so quickly. And then all of a sudden you're just in your room. Obviously no one can come and help and visit or anything like that. Jonathan was very small. He was 6'5", or considered to be very small at 6'5". So I had no clothes for him because I was told that he would be a 7 to 8 pound baby. So he was tiny compared to that. So the poor clothes were like hanging off his limbs. Yeah. So I sent my husband to get clothes and then dropped him into reception to bring up to me, all that ridiculousness that came with it. But I didn't leave Jonathan's side. I didn't shower till I came home on the Tuesday because they were so understaffed. So for the next 3 days, I was hand pumping my colostrum for about 3 hours. And then when he woke, he wasn't latching. So I would use a syringe to syringe feed him. Then he would fall asleep. Then I would hand pump the colostrum again. Then he would wake. So that basically happened for the 3 days. And one of my sisters said to me, you need to ask the pediatrician if he's tongue-tied when she comes around. So now some nurses did help me try and get him to latch, but a lot of the time when I rang the bell, there was no one there. They were so understaffed and they couldn't help everyone. They seemed like, I remember overhearing a woman saying this was the busiest bank holiday they'd had in years. And I could see that in the room. I could sense that they were literally wheeling women and had nowhere to put them because they had closed the rooms that were available to them, but then were ironically closed. So on the Tuesday, the pediatrician started making her rounds and she was, you know, doing his chicken, checking his arms, checking his legs. And I asked, is he tongue-tied? And she said, oh, yeah, he is tongue-tied. I thought she would snip it. Because about 11 or 12 years ago, my nephew was born and he was tongue-tied and they snipped it in the hospital. Mm. Like there then, the pediatrician just snipped it and that was it. So she was like, no, you have to book an appointment. We no longer do that in the hospital. I was a bit agitated because if I'd known that on Saturday, I would have booked an appointment and had it for the Tuesday when I was leaving. Particularly because where I was going to book the appointment was close to the hospital and I wanted to feed. So I wanted to get it done as quickly as possible. So that was fine. I said, I want to feed like I've been giving him the colostrum and feeding him. So she was looking at his thighs and she mentioned that there was a lot of excess skin around his inner thigh area. I just thought, okay, well, myself, my husband are very tall, you know, he's just long limbed and he just has some excess skin there. So she concluded that my placenta had stopped working. Now, what my midwife in my second pregnancy said that the technical term is that the baby was getting reduced. It's not that the placenta had stopped working, that it was a reduction in what the baby was getting, essentially. So I didn't think anything of it in it, really. So she did her rounds and I was going to the bathroom and she was worried about his weight. She was worried about his weight when he was born and then worried that I hadn't been feeding him or I couldn't get him to latch. So this was an issue that she had with me. And I said that I want to feed. I want to primarily feed, you know, and would I consider giving him a bottle? And I said, yes, I've never. No problem with that, but I haven't been able to feed him because he's been tongue-tied and I've had no help or assistance and I didn't see in my whole time there a lactation consultant. There wasn't one on for the weekend, so I didn't see one. So anyway, an hour or two later, I was on my way to the bathroom and she cornered me on the corridor and said that she was pro breastfeeding. She encourages women to breastfeed, but that she wasn't going to release me from the hospital until I took some bottles because she was so worried about the weight of the baby. So obviously I was taken aback and baffled that she would corner me, not only corner me a first time mom, but corner me in the circumstances of like, I had no support in the hospital for 3 days. I hadn't seen anyone. There'd be no lactation consultant, you know, there'd be no one to even help me express the colostrum. I had, you know, like rashes on my boobs and on my breasts from trying to like push. Again, lack of knowledge. I didn't know that the milk ducts are at the back and you need to push from the back forwards, just things like this that you learn through experience. Mm-hmm. So I refused. I said, no, I'm not until I get help with feeding. So a few hours later, the midwife on came to me and said, if you don't take bottles, the pediatrician is genuinely not going to release you. So I was like, oh, fine. So I just went into their storeroom and I was just like grabbing loads of bottles, loads of syringes, loads of random stuff. I was like, look, I'll take these home, you know, whatever. I just want to get out of here. I haven't seen anyone for 3 days. I've been on my own. I just want to go home. So I took them anyway and left, and that was it. What happened was we had to get a midwife out to help us. The one chis tongue tie had been snapped, that was fine, but he would be fed and he would just be sitting there. So for, I'd say, about 2 to 3 weeks, we would feed him. And every time he moved his tongue, we would have the syringe in one side of his mouth and our finger in the other. And every time he moved his tongue, we'd give him a little bit of milk. So it was very draining, but we persevered. And the advantages of COVID was actually that my husband was at home throughout this. Yeah. And working from home so that he could help me, because I would be pumping in the bathroom and he would be feeding him with the syringe and his finger, you know. So eventually, with the support of my sister and my mom, who came over a good few times and literally sat with me every time he needed to be fed, he eventually latched and fed. And I fed him for a year, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But I went back to the pediatrician for a checkup, and she said, he's fine, his weight, he's grown substantially, he's great, la la. And how are you feeding him? I said, oh no, I'm just solely breastfeeding. And she was like, oh, right. And I said, he didn't take any bottles. I said, I never gave him a bottle. I said, he latched, I got his tongue tie done, and he's just been breastfed. And she was like, oh God, that's brilliant. That, go you. And I was like, weren't so encouraging when you cornered me in the hospital. But anyway, so I then proceeded to ask her after I'd had a few weeks to kind of sit and settle with what had happened in the hospital. I proceeded to ask her about the comment about my placenta having stopped working and feeding the baby. And she just showed me a chart and explained to me that she, from her calculations, what she could see was that the placenta had reduced its impact around 36, 37 weeks. And therefore, he wasn't getting as much food as he should have in the last few weeks. So I was a bit taken back by that and upset that it hadn't been picked up on. Particularly because I suppose you think if you are paying, and I know this probably sounds really naive, but if you are paying for the consistency and the continuity of seeing the same gynecologist, that you're going to get, you know, anything like that picked up on. And that would be the reason for why you would be paying, essentially. So I was annoyed, I was angry, I was frustrated. So I had to go back in to my gynecologist anyway, because he had to check up on my episiotomy. So I went in at about 6 weeks for my checkup, and I mentioned it to him, checked me fine. And I mentioned at the end of it, I said, the pediatrician was quite confident in her calculation and assumption that my placenta had reduced working or had stopped working at around 36-37 weeks and feeding the baby. And I'll never forget the first thing that came out of his mouth, which was why my mum had been questioning me. He said, "Oh, yeah, I thought you were a bit small." And then he automatically refrained and said, "Oh, no, I don't mean small. I mean," and I was like, "What? You thought that, but then you didn't do anything about it." And then he began to go on a bit of a tangent about scans, and scans can be 20% out. And he started doing calculations on my chart and saying, you know, oh, 7 to 8 pounds, or 6 to 8. Yeah, that's about 20%. So 6 to 5. And I was getting a bit flustered at, you know, him calculating. I didn't know what he was calculating, really trying to talk his way out of the situation and backtrack. And then he wrote down on a sticky note, "Oh, well, if you were to get pregnant again, you would take aspirin at the start of your pregnancy to enforce that your placenta is strong and sturdy and things like this, la, 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 la." And then he kind of just spoke again, gave me the sticky note, like I had Jonathan with me. I took it, took Jonathan, and then left the office and was a bit...
But if you had said nothing about the pediatrician saying that, he wouldn't have mentioned anything about aspirin.
No, he wouldn't have. And it was also, he said, because Jonathan was there, he said, oh, look at him. Like, he's great. Like, he's lovely now. And he's like a healthy, you know, like, basically, what are you going on about? You have a healthy boy. So, you know, why are you bringing this up? And it was, I felt like saying, well, one, he's healthy because of me, because I just persevered, you know, for the last few weeks to feed him without any support. I said to him, I didn't see, like, it's almost as if my experience was totally, and I understand he probably has hundreds and thousands of clients, and that's absolutely fine. But my whole experience in the hospital was totally disregarded by him. The fact that it was a bank holiday, there was no one on, the fact that there were no rooms, the fact that they were understaffed, the fact that I didn't even see a lactation consultant, you know, any of these issues were just totally pushed to the side. And he was just chatting to me as if I'd had this wonderful experience in the hospital when I clearly hadn't, and I should be grateful that I have a healthy child now. So I don't know if that's just the way he works, but yeah, I was just really bitter about the whole situation. Because I suppose a lot of people would view it like that. Well, what are you giving out about? You have a healthy child now. You know, a lot of people would love to have a child, and what has your experience got to do with it, in a sense? And I suppose then coming into pregnancy the second time, my experience was totally, totally transcended and totally changed. I definitely had PTS in regards to my hospital experience, not speaking up for myself in regards to him and how he made me feel. Like, he made me feel very dismissed, and what was I going on about? Very disempowered and very vulnerable, when I thought that I had kind of gotten stronger through childbirth and becoming a mother. You know, you kind of walk back into those situations and scenarios, and then all of a sudden you don't say a word. You know, when you don't say a peep, and you go in with the intention of, because I'd had the information from the pediatrician, this is what I'm going to say and this is how I'm going to say it. And then I leave and I think, how did that just happen? I didn't say, I didn't voice anything I wanted to voice. I didn't make it known that I was unhappy with his service and I wouldn't be coming back. Like, I scrunched the sticky note up in my hand and like threw it in the bin on the way out of the hospital. I was like, if I have another child, I without a doubt will not be coming back to see you. And even to this day, I think I might make an official complaint.
Yeah.
And my husband's like, either make a complaint or don't make a complaint, but stop talking about it. And I'm like, you don't understand. Because there's that intimidation factor where he is regarded as being wonderful. I mean, he can't say any wrong, like in a lot of settings about him. But then another issue about, I don't know, maybe putting it down on paper would be cathartic. I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's no apology I'm going to get. I don't know what my expectation is as well, because I'm not going to get an admittance of, yes, I should have picked up on the fact that your placenta had, you know, basically reduced and the baby wasn't getting fed as much as it should have in the last few weeks. So then I think, is there a point? So I don't know. But that was my experience on my first. So a bit of a concoction of.
It's hard to because you're not going to get, as you said, any admittance to anything. But for me, I'd just want it to even be in the at least there's like a 50% chance that the right person's eyes could be laid on it. And then at least he was maybe aware, or his secretary or someone saw something of it. And he could just be aware of maybe his manner and how he worded things and dealt with things.
Yes. Yeah, I know, because I think his poor secretary rang me a few weeks later and I had definitely found my voice then. Mm-hmm. And I was really angry on the phone. And I I basically said to her throughout my pregnancy, I was told I was fit. And that makes no difference if you're young, fit and healthy either. Like, these things can happen to anyone if you're young, fit and healthy, or if you're not. You have women in their late 40s, you know, having no problems in pregnancy, and then women in their early 20s having, you know, problems in pregnancy or labor. That doesn't matter. The body doesn't work like that either in regards to age and indifference. So she got just the brunt of my, sadly, probably bitterness when she rang. And I just said, throughout my pregnancy, I was told I was young, fit and healthy. And actually, I was high risk towards the end when it wasn't picked up on. And then I was dismissed when I brought it up as a possibility in regards to something that was missed, and then kind of shooed and shushed out the door, which is a very, very Irish trait. I mean, to shoo something under the carpet and then shush someone who's saying it. So I felt very... yeah, just meek, I suppose, in a lot of senses.
When did you decide that you were ready to add to your family, or did you?
We decided, Jonathan turned one, and I suppose we decided to start trying again. So we were away for a long period of time together as well as a family. So we thought it would be a nice opportunity. There'd be no pressure on us, you know, no stress. We were, we would do like we did on Jonathan and just try and, you know, have no expectations in that sense. So luckily enough for us, again, we tried and we conceived quite quickly. But unfortunately, miscarried at about 9-10 weeks. We were in Spain when it happened, and again with the regulations and the restrictions, I suppose again it was probably another layer of trauma for me. I had to go to the hospital on my own, and I had to have a scan on my own. So not only was I kind of placed in the category of women who had babies on their own during COVID and their partners couldn't come in, but now I was kind of placed in another category of understanding women who had miscarriages or had to deal with information that was traumatizing and had no one there physically to support them. Mm-hmm. And because we were away, my husband was with my son back in the apartment, so it was even worse that I kind of had to leave the hospital and then walk to get a taxi and, you know, get a taxi back to the apartment. And you know, all that, you just feel like you're in a bit of a dream in that sense. Yeah, I didn't have the best experience when I was away, even trying to, again, in regard to hospitals, trying to get to see someone in the public hospital. They sent me away, they actually sent me away, and I was profusely bleeding. Like, I was bleeding through, like, my tampon and into the pad, and I'd stopped at the toilet on the way and put tissue in my pants. And the nurse came out and just said, oh, there was no gynecologist there and no one could see me. And I was bawling, crying. I was like, I just want someone to tell me if I'm pregnant or if I'm not pregnant, because I had still been testing, again, through lack of knowledge. I'd still been testing pregnant on the pregnancy tests. But then I knew that I could still test for weeks after a miscarriage because of the pH levels in your blood. So I just really wanted to know. And she sent me away, and like, I bled all the way through the hospital corridor into the taxi. I went home to my husband, and I actually went back to the private hospital in Spain again. Paid, no problem, was seen within 20 minutes. She scanned me and she just said no, that I just had a natural. She didn't think there was anything, a DMC or anything that needed to be done. I just had a natural miscarriage. So it was, yeah, I just, people think you conceive so quickly, and then after that we weren't planning on, well, not conceiving again, but we weren't actively planning on trying to have another baby. But what happened was that I did conceive quite quickly after that, on Daniel. So I was adamant on this pregnancy that I wanted full disclosure in regards to myself. Like, I wanted to be more active. I wanted to have more of a voice. I was definitely going to do far more research. You know, I wanted a doula with me if I was going to go into the hospital. And then through a lot of research, I then decided to have a home birth. So my husband was quite supportive of that. Again, as I said at the start, because of the incident with the hospital, and then on top of that, layering the incident with kind of the two hospitals I had in Spain, in the treatment, I didn't particularly want to go near a hospital. I didn't feel valued in a hospital unless I paid, which was what happened in relation to my miscarriage.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And I just didn't want, I just didn't want to go back. I definitely had PTS. So I had my 12-week scan and my 20-week scan in a clinic in Bray, and that was fine. I met my midwife at 20 weeks, and as I said to you, that's when she said to me, no, you have to. She said, if you have to transfer in, what hospital are you going to? And I was like, what? I was like, I'm not going to a hospital. She was like, no, you have to have communications with a hospital. So we had moved, so the hospital... So I had to go to another hospital, a different one to what I or where I had had my first, which was fine for me, actually. I was like, OK, that's fine. I'll go to a different hospital. Maybe I'll have a different experience. A lot of people were quite shocked that I had chosen a different hospital, because I don't know, it's an Irish thing. But people like to have, obviously, their children in one hospital. Maybe it's the sentimental. But I, when I said to people, oh, I was going to another hospital, people who knew me from my first were like, oh, but didn't you have Jonathan in? And I was like, yeah. And then I would say, oh, well, I didn't have a great experience. And they'd still be kind of looking at me like I had 10 heads. And so they're going to be born in different hospitals. And I'm like, does that really make a difference?
I think it is a sentimental thing, yeah. Because some people would want to give birth in the hospital that their sister gave birth to their kids, or their mum did, or whatever. I think it is. I think you're right. It's a sentimental thing.
Yeah, and it can be, like you said, like a lineage thing. Like I was born here and my sisters, and it is nice. It is nice to think of it in that way. But I suppose I just had none of that around my first, so I definitely wasn't thinking like that. But I didn't tell anyone I was planning a home birth other than my husband and maybe one or two friends, because I didn't I didn't want what comes with the home birth, you know, the questions or the criticism or the, you know, the shock or the horror that I was putting the baby's life in jeopardy, and, you know, we were all going to die and that was going to be it. So I just didn't want opinions, to be honest. I just wanted to kind of cocoon myself, particularly after a miscarriage. I just wanted to kind of cocoon myself in the pregnancy and be far more attuned and in tune with it as well. I feel in my first pregnancy I very much just went about, I don't want to say naive, but I was just a bit, I don't want to say dilly-dallying, like, but I could have done more to educate myself in what like the fourth trimester is. Like, I'm very much into health and nutrition anyway, but even on my second pregnancy, I was even more into it in regards to like supporting my milk supply, you know, regaining strength, anything like that. I was just embracing, and I was really engaging with that information more so than on my first. I don't really know what I did on my first. Yeah, so I mean, my midwife was fabulous. She came, again, the advantage, my husband was working from home and we would have our appointments at home. She came to visit me here and he could work, or, and then she, you know, she could be here if he had any questions. Obviously, he was a little bit more apprehensive in regards to a home birth. He, before we had fully decided on, even though I always had decided, but I suppose I had to pretend that he had a say. he rang her, and any questions that he had, you know, she was able to answer them for him. So when we met her then, it's just nice to have that intimate chat with someone,
yeah, kind of absolutely,
as well, and having a far more kind of friendly feel about it, rather than your appointment's at 1:35 and then you're kind of shushed out of an office at, you know, 1:45 because there's another appointment at 1:50, you know, which is understandable because of schedules, and, you know, that's the way of the world, and you can't harbour ill feelings in regards to that. But it's just nice to be in the comfort of your own home, you know. And I suppose that was another reason, other than the treatment, that I felt that I was given in the hospital, just the the hospital environment is just not conducive to having babies. Like, it's bright. I mean, it's so noisy. The beds are so uncomfortable. And I know this is no one who works in the hospital's fault. That's just the way they're built. But everything about it, I mean, it must be so traumatizing for a baby to come out. They're so cozy and comforted, you know, in this dark space, and all of a sudden they're out in this brightness, and even the lights, they're not even, you know, aesthetically pleasing. They're just horrible. I just find the whole atmosphere very sterile and just not comforting. So I really wanted to be at home. So I, again, showed up on the doorsteps of this hospital at about 20 weeks. And they were nay pleased to see me. I went in and said, you know, I have to whatever book in. I was like the last, shepherd. They were baffled and perplexed about where I'd been and what I was doing for 20 weeks. And I said, oh, I'm planning a home birth. So I didn't really think I needed to come here, but my midwife told me I did. So the first doctor I got was, she almost bluntly absconded me. You know, I was irresponsible and why hadn't I been with her? And I said, I've had scans. I had a scan at 20 weeks. I had a scan at 12 weeks. I also didn't particularly want endless scans. Yeah. Every time I went to my gynecologist on Jonathan, we went into his office. Hi, how are you? Took out my file. And then he scanned me. And I was like, okay, fine. Again, this is what happens. This is what, you know, should be done. This is the order of it. And then I read a lot of studies from Germany and kind of more Northern Hemisphere countries about how sometimes scanning can actually affect the baby and the fetus's growth, you know, over scanning, obviously. So I wanted to reduce scanning as much as possible. The doctor, was extremely unhappy with me just showing up. So then I told him my history of my first Jonathan. He was 6'5", and they now have this scale, and 6'5" is considered a small baby, an underdeveloped small baby. Nice. So then I was a high alert case in that sense. So she passed me on to a gynecologist, and he brought me in and he said, you know, your history is that you have small babies. I was like, I didn't think 6'5" was a small baby. My mother had babies and we were all six, and some of us were actually 5, you know, 5'10", 5'11". It's like, I didn't know that 6'5" was a small baby. Oh yeah, it's considered a small baby nowadays. La 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 la, you're considering a home birth. He would advise me against that. I said, that's fine. In the same sentence as he was advising me against the home birth, he said, I don't know much about home births, but I would advise you against the home birth. I was like, okay. Anyway, so he just said, can we agree that towards the end of your pregnancy, you may need some more scans, growth scans? And I said, that's fine. To be honest, most of my time in the hospital, I just wanted to get out. So I was very agreeable. Mm. Until a certain stage. So yeah, fine, great, fine. So I went every 2 weeks to have my appointments, went every 2 weeks. I had had at about 36 weeks the slip in the kitchen, and I'd gone into the hospital on the Saturday, and again, I don't know why, because there was no one on. But they traced me for a half. I felt fine, but I just wanted a little bit of confirmation. So they just traced me for a half an hour, 40 minutes. You know, when something like that happens and then you just get into your own head. And I was thinking, oh, the baby's not moving that much. Or are they moving? Or are they not moving as much as they were yesterday before my fall? Or, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The only way to put your mind at rest is go in and get things checked. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just went in, and we're not too far. So I just went in. She traced me for like 30, 40 minutes and then said, no, you're fine. Like, I think you're fine, but maybe come back next week. Now, I was on like a Monday clinic and it was a bank holiday. So she was like, come in on Friday. So you don't have to wait all the way to another week. So I said, okay, that's no problem. So I went in on the Friday, and obviously there was no appointment for me. So I just waited around and I told them what the situation was. And she said, okay, we'll just wait there and we'll get someone to see you. So I said, okay, that's fine. So I saw a young female gynecologist, I would say newly qualified, because she was very guidelines driven, in the sense that I went in, she scanned me, and she said that I was scanning like 3 or 4 weeks behind where I should be. And I said, okay, I've had this throughout my whole pregnancy. Like, you're small, you're small, you're small, the baby's going to be small, you're small, you're small. I was just like, okay. Now, I knew on Daniel, even clothes-wise, that I was bigger. I knew intuitively and gut feeling. I was like, this baby's bigger. I could just feel it myself. And I knew that I was much bigger. So, and I also am tall and have a longer torso in that regard. So that was fine. She then proceeded to say, well, this hospital's guidelines are that you are induced. And I said, okay. So when I'm actually planning a home birth, so like, I won't be getting induced. She was like, well, from 36 weeks, we would advise induction. I said, okay, that's fine. But I'm like, I won't be getting induced. So then she proceeded to tell me that if I didn't essentially take up the induction, that I was at a there was a very high probability of having a stillborn, and that I would be putting my baby's life at risk. So I was completely taken back by this. If I was to go back again, I'd actually probably ask her to write that down on a piece of paper, the fact that it came out of her mouth. I was like, are you, like, this could induce labor, the stress of this conversation. So I said, okay. So she was vehemently pushing for an induction, with many things that came out of her mouth. Like, my baby could be a stillborn, they couldn't get enough oxygen, they could die, they won't get enough food, you won't even realize that the baby has, you know, basically reduced movements, etc. So I said, okay, I'm just going to ring my midwife and talk to her. So we were in a private room at this stage, and she got up and she said, oh, that's no problem. She said, you can just ring her on that phone there and I'll leave the room. And I said, no, I'll be leaving this hospital and this room and ringing my midwife. And then it's my decision if I come back to be traced. So she wanted me to retrace then for another like half an hour, 40 minutes. So I said, and then it'll be my decision if I want to come back and be traced and induced. So she was completely taken back by that. I left the hospital, rang my midwife, had a discussion with her, came back and got traced for 40 minutes. She came back into the room when I was being traced and said, seeing as you were refusing an induction, we want you to come back on Monday. This was Friday. I was like, what? Well, how much growing is the baby going to do in 2 days? I was like, this is ridiculous. So I said, fine, that's no problem. Fine. Came back on Monday and I got another midwife or gynecologist, lovely lady. She scanned me again. She said, yeah, you're maybe a week or two behind, but she didn't see anything substantial to worry about. She was actually, I said to her, I'm having a home birth, and she was asking me why I chose to have a home birth. She was quite inquisitive and open-minded to my decision to have a home birth. So we sat down at the table at the end of it, and she said, I assume you're having a home birth. You're well informed. Induction is there for you if you want it, but it's your choice. And I said, okay, that's fine. I said, I'm not going to be induced. I want to go to 40 weeks and I would like to go into labor naturally. And she said, okay. And I left the hospital and I was fine. So it was great. Then we got to 38 weeks and So in between those two appointments, I remember I collected my son and I got a phone call on the Wednesday from the hospital. and a midwife asking me if I had wanted to take them up on their offer of induction. And I was like, no, is this like some sort of HR like call? Like, no, I'm okay. I was literally in the hospital 2 days ago.
So bizarre. That's so strange.
I was like, do you get commission from this? Yeah. Or yeah. No, I said, no, I was in the hospital one day and I refused. Like, I actually walked out. She was like, oh, okay. Well, just to let you know that it's there if you want it. I was like, okay. And I just hung up the phone and was like, this is just so bizarre. So I feel like the hospital went on a rampage of trying to annoy me so much that I would just choose an induction. Mm. They rang me daily to come in and be scanned and seen. So I had told the doctor, at 38 weeks, I went back in again, got scanned. I told the doctor, I want to reduce my scans. I don't want to be scanned every 3 days until I'm 40 weeks. I said, I'll come in every week. That's fine. I said, I'm not coming in every 3 days to be scanned. Again, he sent me up to the where they have, you know, more intense scanners. Again, we all know the scans can be like 20% and actually even more in the latter part of your pregnancy. Went up. The sonographer who I'd seen through my whole pregnancy was like the same lady. Every time I saw her, she was like, hello again. And I was like, hi. They think I'm really small. And every time she was scanning me, I was looking at her for any sort of indication that there was something wrong. She was showing me the placenta and it was still feeding the baby. She could see, you know, the amniotic fluid. I used to ask her every time, do you see any problems? And she was like, no, I don't, but I'll send it down to the doctor. And then every time I would go down to the doctor, they would be pushing for an induction. So 38 weeks again, I was told by a male doctor that if I didn't have an induction, I'd be putting my baby's life at risk. If I had or continued to persevere with having a home birth, the baby would have to be rushed into hospital and straight into ICU because it wouldn't be able to breathe properly because of the lack of lung capacity that the baby would have. So I felt like he was, I felt I was getting stronger in refusing the induction, and he was kind of my last fence where his ridiculousness, or what I could only categorize as ridiculousness of trying to fear me, actually was making me louder. I wasn't abrasive or aggressive in any way. I just said, okay, yeah, thanks, but no. So I'll see you next Thursday, like at 39 weeks. And he was just, obviously for a male, it's probably a little bit more difficult. He doesn't know, you know, probably what to say to me or, you know, how to go about this. And sometimes I think people don't say no. So they probably don't know how to respond. So I just walked out of the room. I booked another appointment for 39 weeks and left. I used to go to the beach. I used to ground myself because sometimes it would get into my head that, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe, you know, the baby is really small.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
The baby's life at risk. Maybe I'm not doing the right thing. And then I would go and grind myself, walk, kind of talk to the baby and just know that I was bigger, that the baby was moving and that, you know, we were continuing going forwards. So they wanted to come in on, I think it was, went in 39. And then just before, the few days before my 40 weeks, there was an appointment on the Friday and I didn't go to it. I wanted to go into, I knew that if I went in that close to my due date, that the push and the pressure on me to stay in and induce would potentially be too much for me in a vulnerable state. So I didn't go in for my scan. Now, they rang me and they rang my husband. I didn't pick up. And my husband then was terrified that if we needed to transfer in, no one would see us. And I was like, no, they have to see us, but we'll be fine. So I did answer then after 6 or 7 calls, and I got a midwife who was obviously extremely agitated by my actions. And I just said, I'm resting. I was in bed when I answered the call. I said, I'm resting. Like, my due date was on the Sunday. I was 40 weeks on the Sunday, and this was the Friday. I said, I want to go into labor naturally. I said, I'm resting for the moment. I said, I don't want to be hassled. And she said, oh, so does that mean you're not coming in to be traced? I said, no, I'm not coming in to be traced because, well, one, I didn't want to drive either. I was like, no, I just want to go for a walk. I just want to rest. You know, no, I don't. So again, she was a bit abrasive with me and she just hung up. I went into labor then 3 days later. I was 40 and 3. The same on both Jonathan and Daniel. I was 40 and 3. And also, I said to one of the gynecologists at one of the meetings, I said, I don't know if I am, like, I was measuring, they would say, just say I was 38 weeks. And they would say, well, you're measuring 34 or 35. I said, I could be 34 or 35 because I didn't have a period in between when I miscarried and when I conceived.
Okay.
So I said, you could potentially be inducing me at 34 and not 38, you know? So the development of them, particularly their lung development, essentially happens in the last few weeks. So I was like, you could be actually causing more harm than good by inducing me so early when you think I'm actually ironically so late. So I was very much all about nature taking its own course in that regard. So I went into labor. My waters broke this time fully. The midwife was called. We labored at home for a significant amount of time. And then I hadn't even considered transferring into hospital, so much so that I didn't have a bag packed or anything. The midwife just said to my husband, we need to transfer in. The baby was back to back and he wasn't turning. And what happened was, what was happening was that his heart rate was dropping. So he was trying to turn. So his heart rate was rising during that time. And then obviously he was becoming exasperated and exhausted with the effort to turn. Mm-hmm. And then his heart rate would drop. Like, my husband was frantically filling the water, the birth pill, with like pots and pans. And then all of a sudden the midwife was like, yeah, no, we got to transfer. And he was like, what? So we had to go up and pack a bag for me with essentials, which obviously even on the second baby, he didn't know what they were. And we transferred in. When the ambulance guys came, hilariously, but obviously I didn't think so because I was in a huge amount of pain, they came in and they were like, Jesus, is there a party going on in here, with the pill open and ready. And I was just obviously in screaming in agony. We had just moved into our house as well, so an ambulance showing up, I think it was about 2 o'clock in the morning we transferred in, brought all the neighbors out.
All the neighbors out. Yeah, of course. No.
To see if I was okay, as I just shrieked on the way to the ambulance in pure pain. And probably thought, why didn't you go into the hospital a little bit earlier? Like, what's wrong with her? It's her second. Obviously, because I wasn't going to have them. I'm just going to have my baby at home in the TV room. Like, if that's okay. If you hear anyone.
I know, you tell nobody. Yeah, and I still say to my neighbor, you did, because we live in a semi-D, and I still say to my neighbor, you heard me. Like, it was 3 o'clock in the day. You definitely heard me. It was in the sitting room. Her sitting room's right there. She did, and she still denies it.
I know. She heard nothing. Polite.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no bother at all. Didn't hear a thing.
Definitely did.
They probably heard me as well. But yeah, we transferred in and The midwife came with me. Unfortunately, she couldn't come in then to the ward. Only one person is allowed in, which was, and obviously I would choose my husband, but because he was back to back, just the pain on your low back is excruciating. And she had some magical way of pushing on my low back that would just reduce the pain when the contractions came. She was trying to teach my husband how to do it, but I mean, he was doing the best that he could in a very stressful situation, and he's not a trained midwife, so that also probably doesn't help. But we transferred in, and she left just then. I birthed for another while in there, but then opted for an epidural after a few hours because the pain again was just, it was building. So I felt this time the room itself was much smaller. So I felt that I was less vulnerable in a sense. I had one midwife with me who was tracking me and tracking the baby's heart. Again, I felt like I was just a little bit more secure in that sense. And I suppose my fear when I transferred in was that they were going to section me, and I didn't want to section. And then when I asked the midwife, I said, I don't want to section. She was like, no, like, hopefully it won't come to that, because I suppose my experience of me having to be, or you know, them offering induction, was that if there's any problem, and I understand that in hospitals for legal reasons and insurance reasons, and the legality is that it's probably easier just to section than to let, you know, the woman labor. So I really didn't want to section. And I also hadn't time to express any of what I wanted if I had to get a section, you know? Because they wouldn't be coming down the birthing canal. I know that the regulating of breath, and they wouldn't be getting all that bacteria, which you get from a vaginal birth, you know? So anything that I'd wanted, which would be kind of, you know, the swabbing of the vagina to place it on the baby afterwards or anything like that, wasn't expressed. So there was that fear that because I was so staunchly adamant that I was going to home birth, and you know, I felt like if I didn't convince myself of that, then it might not happen. So I kind of mindset wise was like, no, this is going to happen, and there's no other alternative, you know, nothing else can seep in, you know, that kind of bullish mindset. But obviously that's why you pay for a midwife, so their expertise and their experience clearly is what you go on, and the safety, you know, the safety of the baby. I'm not that staunch in mindset that I would stay at home and put the safety of the baby in any way, you know, danger. So she was like, no, don't worry, we're just going to track the baby and see how you're getting on first. And then it kind of reduced. I was like, I don't want an appendectomy. She was like, no, I think you'll be okay. Like, let's just see how we get on. So I opted for an epidural, and which at the time was obviously the decision, the best decision for me. Daniel came out. Again, he turned a little bit like Jonathan towards the end. He did need a little bit of help, but thankfully I didn't need an episiotomy or anything like that. He came out, and my first question was obviously, what was his weight? Because constantly through my pregnancy was, you're going to have a small baby, you're going to have a small baby, you're going to have a small baby. And he was 7'7".
Stop. Wow. Because that was throughout this part of your story. In my head, I was like, what weight was he?
Yeah, I know. Like, literally, I was like, I don't even think I asked his sex. I was just like, what weight is he? Like, William, quickly, now. No need to put him on my chest. And she was like, no, he's 7'7". And I could see when she put him on, I was like, he is a chunk. I was like, I can see he has chunky legs. Like, he has, you know, good, solid legs. And he is. He's a solid lump now. But, yeah, 7'7". I was real like, even my midwife, when I texted her and said, you know, we had a baby boy, 7'7", she was like, whoa, I myself didn't think he was going to be 7'7". And I was like, but I did. I knew that he was bigger. And I, even in my aftercare appointments with my midwife, saying that to her, she was saying to me, I understand that, but me as a professional, I didn't know you in your first pregnancy.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying to her, no, I'm bigger. I am bigger, this, that. And she was like, you know, I only have your word to go on. And I'm like, yeah, but that should be the only one that matters. But essentially is just so down the pecking order, unfortunately, in regards to birth. But my experience then was much more positive in this hospital. Now, I was considered, even my husband was saying, you seem to be the woman that transferred from a home birth. Like, everyone who came to see me was like, oh, sorry, didn't get your home birth. And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, it's not really an issue anymore because I'm here and I've had the baby. But everyone that came to see me, from pediatrician to midwife, would say, oh, you had to transfer in from a home birth. I was like, yeah, 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 thanks. Yeah, baby's fine. I'm fine. Yeah, thanks. Okay. But also with that, ironically enough, after having the baby, what came after that was, oh, well, you should know everything. You know, like, you don't need us for anything, any help, any assistance with like feeding or, you know, physio or anything like that. It was very much like, oh, you opted for a home birth, which pre-pregnancy was the worst decision I could ever have made, and was putting myself and my baby at jeopardy. And then post-pregnancy was, oh, well, you don't need any support because you know everything. And I'm like, oh, how did that change so swiftly?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
So I just wanted to get out of the hospital. I wanted to get out like an hour later, but they said that I had to stay in for the night because he was, he needed assistance coming out. So that was fine. So he was a little bit jaundiced when he came out, and they took his blood and just said he has jaundice. I said, that's fine. And my mum always talks of my sister. My elder sister was blonde, 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 and pale, pale skin. And then the second eldest was dark, dark hair and had really bad jaundice when she was born. So my mum actually almost like shrieked when she came out and was like, whose baby is that? It's so totally different. But I knew from her just telling birth stories that you just feed the jaundice out of them. You know, she fed her. So they wanted to see me the next day, which I thought, you know, after release. So they released me anyway. I had no problems in that regard. He fed straight away, which was amazing, which I was so thankful for. And I think my husband was the most thankful for that. He was having flashbacks to literally syringe feeding Jonathan for like 3 weeks because I was so adamant that I was feeding him. Like, even in regards to Jonathan, I hadn't bought any bottles. I hadn't bought a sterilizer. I bought nothing. And which is stupid in hindsight, because at the start you need to potentially pump off like a little bit of milk when you have extra milk at the start when they're not feeding so much, and then store it. But I was so vehemently adamant that I was feeding on my first that I didn't have any of the equipment to support me at all. So I was grateful that he came out and he fed straight away, which was amazing. But I suppose my only afterbirth issue I had was when I went back to the hospital to check his jaundice. And he has this, you know, they prick them on the side of their foot to take the blood. And he still has that little purplish scar from it. Okay. Because, I mean, they're so small and their skin is so new. So we went back and I had only fed for 2 days, so only so much could have been flushed out of him. But he was having wet nappies and everything like that. And the doctor wanted to take another blood sample to see, because there was this scale and he was kind of on the middle. And I just refused. I said, no. I said, you haven't given me enough time to flush it out of him. And I don't want him to be pricked again, essentially, when in 2 days I come back, which you're probably going to tell me to do if you take the blood or if you don't take the blood. And then more than likely, you're going to tell me that he's come down on the scale and he can be fully discharged. So the young doctor, male doctor, was a bit taken back. And I just said, I'll come back in 2 days. Give me time to flush it out of him. And then we'll see where we are. So left, and then obviously went back to the hospital 2 days later. And he said, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Absolutely perfect. The jaundice is nearly almost gone. You know, and that's it. And then I was discharged. Yeah. So after that, I had aftercare with my midwife for the next few weeks. But everything, yeah, I think the feeding element just helped everything, really, yeah. In that sense that he fed. Now, there, obviously, the latching and the pain that comes with that when you completely forget, all came swarming back. But I had a much more positive hospital experience anyway. I mean, I wouldn't say upset that I hadn't achieved a home birth. It was more for the comfort. I suppose it started out as a decision that I made because I didn't want to go into the hospital. I didn't want to go back to a hospital. I didn't want to have a negative experience. Definitely. And I had surrounded myself or tried to kind of shield myself with positive experiences and affirmations, because I knew, again, doing extensive research, that stress, trauma, you know, your environment can literally affect the DNA and the cells of the baby, you know. So I knew that, like, as much as we know that the food that we eat is important, like the environment that we put ourselves in is even more so. So I knew that. So I was very conscious after every appointment that I thought would be slightly traumatizing to me, to go ground myself, to go to the beach, to take time for myself, you know, to come back to, you know, my gut, my own affirmations, and then continue on from there. So it's more having the comfort, like the first few days at home, and you can just lie on the couch and you can just kind of, you know, you're not in this, almost you feel like this caged area of a room where you don't feel comfortable going to the bathroom. You don't feel comfortable leaving your baby there. It's just, yeah, you just prefer to be at home. I suppose I would think everyone agrees to that in some sense of the word. But yeah, so it was definitely a much more positive experience, even in regards to having to transfer in, for sure. Yeah. So that's the thing.
I'm just so happy to hear that he was 7'7". Like, both mine were, one of mine was, I can't remember which was which. One was 7'8" and one was 7'5". So, like, I'm delighted that he was that weight and that you got to kind of, you saw how trustworthy your own gut is. Like, do you know what I mean by that?
Yes. Yeah.
That, yeah, you could trust, definitely. Yeah. Your own instincts as well.
Yeah, it was a lot about that. And sometimes even if I had some doubt, I wouldn't share it with my husband. I didn't want to instill fear in him, but then I also didn't want to say it out loud. And I did turn to other midwives that I knew to confirm my gut instincts. Like, the baby was moving, I was growing, like, I was bigger. I was wearing the exact same clothes as I did on my first, like, I didn't invest in maternity clothes, you know, or a huge amount of them. So I was wearing the same clothes that I was on my first, and I wasn't fitting into them, you know. And I was having the same diet, so I knew that I was bigger. And even people I had worked with would say, oh yeah, no, you've popped earlier on this pregnancy. But I think that was just because I was growing, he was growing more. I think in a lot of senses now, the difference between my pregnancy as well are that on my first pregnancy, I didn't eat meat. So I was iron deficient, and I was taking iron tablets. But then again, through information and study, like something synthetic is not as good as the actual, you know, source itself. So on my second pregnancy, I was actually craving red meat. And then understanding that what I was craving is actually what the body is lacking. Mm. So I was craving red meat, so I was eating red meat, and I was starting to research and source like grass-fed meat from Galway, which I was getting delivered up to Dublin, and also source like really good, because I was craving like really cold dairy, like really cold milk and really cold yogurt, like thick Greek yogurt, like almost unpasteurized, you know, that sense. So I just started to do a lot of research on getting it straight from the source. So I was getting a lot of meat and eggs and dairy straight from farms and local markets. And I think that my diet also had an effect potentially on the growth of Daniel as well. Mm.
Kate, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks a million. Bye.
I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your story, you're more than welcome to. You can get in touch on the website, irelandsbirthstories.ie. Click on the Share Your Stories tab and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. If you would like to support the podcast and help me keep it afloat, you can click on the Acast link in the show notes there. And for the price of a coffee a month, you can contribute to keeping the podcast going, basically. Thank you to those that have. I really appreciate it. Have a good week and I will be back on Monday with a new episode.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.